dad's not here right now. He's still at work. So I'm going to bless him.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I'm going to see if there's a clean version so that my parents and the people at my school will not get mad at me. We've got the spritzer filled with water just in case if stuff gets too fire. I'm going to set up the speaker and I'm going to listen to
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I think this is the best
Mike Shope
feature that I've heard in a long time. I think his flow is really good on it, and I like his aggressiveness on it. And
the Bulldog
put not enough effort in it. I think overall his flow was good, but I don't like that mumble rapping. That was my review of
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Didn't need the spritzer. Wasn't fire enough. No spritzer for you. No spritzer.
Only slightly serious question to begin the proceedings today. If the Bills were the Bengals and Josh Allen was blasted in the face mask on that final drive two or three times and none of it was called, I'll leave the Gesicki hysterics at the goal line out of it, because that you look like the floppiest. Derek Roy was playing tight end for the Bengals last night. If that had happened to the Bills last night, would we be the ones? Would it be like Cover One, Del Reed? Who would be like organizing the petition and the march on the NFL offices? I feel like we would be inconsolably insane if a game like that with those stakes, right? We're trying to get off the mat, trying to save our season, playing one of our rivals, and 2-point conversion, defensive lineman palms Allen in the face mask, and the, you know, pass incomplete. You lose. How would torches? Would we be marching? What would be happening? This show would sound like we were losing our minds.
So
this is going to happen at some point.
It is.
Hopefully not this season, but like they've not really gotten smoked by the refs yet. But that's out there. Your turn comes up.
And what you hope is it's not in like the AFC divisional game.
Right, sure.
And the thing about the thing in that game yesterday is how many people, especially the people that are really, like, they're clued in on the analytics stuff. Like, you finally see a coach who knows his defense cannot stop the offense. We saw it on Monday Night Football. The Buccaneers were cowards.
Yep.
And they lost because of it. And now you see a coach say, screw it. We're going for the win. They've got four straight touchdown drives. Can't stop them.
Right.
And then you missed two penalties on one play. And like yesterday, the thing that I found myself complaining about the most is the sky judge. Because I know right now, and this probably will have to be talked about at the owners' meetings this offseason, is they can't retroactively call a penalty that hasn't been called.
They can correct bad calls that weren't warranted, but they cannot correct missed calls where no flag was thrown.
That's got to change.
I think it's hard to argue against that, considering what's happened here in the last week or so, but especially last night. Minnesota had the thing a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
I think anyone can understand why they're avoiding that, right? Because once you open that,
you do have to create a scope for it.
It's a bottomless pit.
You have to create a scope for it. But like, and maybe you only want those to be inside 2 minutes of each, in the second and fourth quarters and in all of overtime.
Hmm.
Almost like to say, these are the most important points of the game.
Yeah.
We have to make sure that the integrity of the game is upheld, because what we're seeing is, you know, and a perfect example is the Josh Allen holding plays, right? The touchdown, he gets the holding call. There's two phantom holding calls in a row, right? As much as I'd like to see those calls actually be correct, I don't think that's where my head is on what needs to be corrected. Mm-hmm. What needs to be corrected is in a 2-point conversion with the game on the line, you have to be able, and like, the random usage of it, and like they used it for the first time ever against the Bills in Houston, that kickoff fumble is like, oh, there's a sky judge?
Oh, right.
Since when?
Right.
Running out onto the field to whisper in the referee's ear.
Back in 2019, we're talking about that playoff game?
Yeah.
Right. The guys in the black coats.
He just runs out of the field. Right. Like, who's that guy?
Who are those people?
Oh,
okay.
The guy from the sideline said, we can't, we got to change that call.
Yeah.
So I guess for me, they can't just be so wishy-washy about it. If they're going to introduce someone that is a check for referees, the things, because then what you're asking referees to do is, if it's close, throw a flag. Right. And that's not where we want to be.
No.
And what I'll say is, the thing I like about the Sky Judge is every time there is that it's implemented, it's quick, we're done.
Yeah. See, the trouble, maybe confining it to the final 2 minutes of the half might be a good starting point. I just think once you start that with what was it, look at that, look how obvious that was, look at this, I just think you're never going to stop. Like every play, I just think you're going to find something. And no, it won't be as obvious as the quarterback. Like, how can I ask again for the millionth time, how do you miss that? It's not only is it the guy with the ball in his hands, it's like head contact with the quarterback. How many times have we seen roughing the passer called when a guy's hand like glances off a helmet, not even the face mask? Like that is, they're making it a point of emphasis. The head, you know, we got it. Rightly so. I'm not arguing that. But how in the world does that get missed? I can't really fathom it. And so it's so frustrating, but I don't know. I feel like there's a trap door under there. That I just think it will never end. And that's why I hated replay to begin with. Because once you introduce it, and now we're modifying it, and we're using SkyRef to try to correct things, and, you know, fine when it works, but you're left a lot of the time going, how come you couldn't fix that? How come you couldn't fix that?
I will say, doesn't it sort of just feel like we're entering the stage of this whole thing where we just say, let's get rid of the referees and just do this automatically.
Sure.
Let's do this via camera, and let's get these, no offense to older folks, these aren't really young, spry guys. We've got like 65-plus-year-old men out there who can't really keep up.
Don't forget about that dude that raced down the field with Justin Jefferson earlier this year.
Other than
that guy.
That was pretty impressive.
Like Olympian athlete level.
That was impressive. Yeah.
But no, sure. Yeah. I just, man, I don't want to be exactly the guy that's saying, you know, they're going to come for you eventually, but like our turn is going to come up at some point here. I mean, people that are more tuned into that than even I am may already have a list from this year, because I try very, very hard. And you know, from hosting the post-game show and doing the show that's after our post-game show, Nate, that like the refs are like, people are always ready to go on the refs. And so
that's for sure.
I just like, all right, just take it for what it is. It's going to be terrible.
What I appreciate about where we've come on for Thursday Night Football is Al Michaels checked out. We all agree. I mean, during the game, it's basically, who's the guy from HBO that was just doing the baseball playoffs? We were like,
Costas.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Costas is like at the really extreme end of checked out, but Al Michaels has been checked out since he got $1 billion from Amazon to do this, right? But even he is in doesn't give a bleep mode. Right. He's just like, these refs are the worst things I've ever seen. This is worse than, you know,
yeah,
fill in an uncurable disease. Like, that's basically what he says out there. And then you've got their, you know, the
Terry.
Let's go to our rules analyst, who really is just there to do PR.
This is Jeremy's speech here from our morning show.
Yeah, it is Jeremy.
But like, that is replay begets the discussion about replays and getting calls right. And so that gives you then eventually these rules analysts, which gives you more focus on the replays and getting it right. And the whole thing needs to be just shoveled into a landfill, which is, of course, it's never going to happen. So thus, this ends today's complaints about the officiating. Unless anybody wants to talk about it, 803-0550, you're fine. And welcome to join us. I just, you know, I feel like ominously some moment in time here, it's going to get us. And I don't know. To say I'm terrified of it is ridiculous, but I'm on edge. I just, at some time here, some key moment, you're just going to get tripped up by something that you cannot believe they missed. And we'll have no recourse because nobody ever does. So, I don't know. That outcome last night worked for me. I think we were talking about it yesterday, and I preferred burying the Bengals. I don't think I'd go so far as to say I'm more worried about the Bengals than I am the Ravens. This is, I feel like the Ravens are still within striking distance of Pittsburgh, and I'd prefer they kind of get out of the wild card mix because I don't want to deal with them in round one of the playoffs, and nor would I want to deal with the Bengals. And so they're not out of it. Their schedule's pretty soft moving forward. They have 7 games left, and 5-2 is realistic, and so maybe they can still get there. But I was happy to see them lose, even though they got robbed.
Same. I think there was a pretty general consensus amongst even like Chiefs fans and people that I follow. Everybody agrees, bury the Bengals. Nobody really wants to play that team. I do think a big takeaway from that game last night, though, is even with Kyle Hamilton on the field, the Ravens defense is dramatically – Who'd they lose? I mean, they lost Clowney, and he was pretty good for them. Patrick Queen? Did he make them that much better? Is he the best linebacker ever?
I don't know, but they're a disaster.
I mean, I'm like struggling to think of a comparison of how bad they are defensively. And without Kyle Hamilton, it is – they don't have a prayer.
And that looked like – it could have been really bad. I don't know that it is. I don't know if they're...
They're saying it could be a sprain a couple of weeks, but right. it looked like it could have been like season ending.
Yeah, right. I agree. Like dislocated even.
Yep.
Is what I thought when I first saw it. So, yeah, I feel like they can be had. Like they can be scored on. You just need, you need to have your receivers and have them be healthy.
Their offense is so hot and cold. Their offense can be literally unstoppable, and then their offense could put themselves in 3rd and 17s, drive after drive.
Yeah.
But man, when Lamar turns it on, it's a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
It's a thing of beauty.
That run down the sideline last night was that was next level.
And nobody. It's like the problem with trying to hit Lamar is usually like right as you hit him, he releases the ball. So you don't want to hit him because you don't want to get the personal foul penalty.
Right.
But then there was an example or a play from yesterday where he pumps and the guy kind of, okay, I stop. Oh, no, he still got the ball. Right. And it's like him and Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. There may not be 3 quarterbacks ever to be as good at avoiding sacks as those 3 guys.
I think that's right. Yeah, they we talked about it yesterday. We'll get into some wagering conversation with Sam Paniatovich coming up here at the bottom of the hour. He's having the year that he needed to have to get a 3rd MVP, Jackson. He just is. And I didn't think that year was out there for him,
but
it looks like it's happening.
Henry's going to hurt it. Henry's going to hurt the conversation a little bit. I mean, he won it with 24 touchdowns, so who am I to,
right.
I guess,
he's
say.
Just out. He's blowing last year out of the water, and I hear you, but Henry is still a running back, and I just feel like he just looks so good. It's hard to argue with at this point, I think. 803-0550 is the number. I mentioned the start of the lineup. Sam Paniatovich from BetQL Daily will be our guest coming up in about 15 or 20 minutes. We've got Sal Capaccio lined up at 4. Matt Perino from New York Upstate, Bill's beat guy, will join us at 5. And I'll have Paul at 6 to go over the Sabres. Big win at Madison Square Garden last night. Gary's first up this segment. Hi, Gary. Thank you for calling. You're on the air here on WGR.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Really good. Thanks.
Let me vent for a second. I know you've been talking about officiating like for a while, but I have to get this off my chest. I know you guys have spoken about this before. When are they going to, when are they going to make these referees accountable for anything that they do? Whether it's any type of press conferences, I'm just sick of seeing games blown in the last 2 minutes of a game and having the wrong team win because they don't have their eyeglasses on or they're not looking attentively at what's going on in the field. And at some point or another, it's going to happen in a freaking Super Bowl, and we're going to be talking about that for 4.5 months. So I'm curious, at what point do they do anything for accountability for these referees? I hear nothing.
Well, that's because it doesn't really hurt them. you know, I mean, it does. It hurts the Bengals today, and Bengals fans are really mad. And, you know, objective football fans and analysts are pointing out how bad it is, but it never stops. Like, are you turning it off because of it? Am I? Is anyone? No. At least not enough to make a difference. It never sticks to them. And so, I don't know, make them accountable. I mean, they're graded. Assignments for the playoffs are handed out on those grades.
Yep.
So, you know, there's your system. But, you know, what do you want? Do you want a public flogging? I mean, you know, it's why I even feel kind of like a chump bitching about it to start this radio show today. Because what are we were just yelling into the void. It's not something that's going to be addressed. I don't know. Are we in a really bad run right now? Or is this just pretty much how it is every year? I think this is probably pretty much how it is every year, right? Like, is it way worse or something? I don't think so. It's just that what has happened is that they have a mechanism in place now that I think we want to believe can fix everything. And what I think you need to get through your head, or what I need to get through my head, I'm not speaking pejoratively here, like I'm in the same boat, sort of being confused by it, is you can't make everything okay. You can't fix everything. It's not possible. I think it's not functional to do it. In a vacuum, this play or that play, should they have been able to fix that because of the timing of it, you know, the end of the game or whatever? Yeah, maybe. But I think I would have to admit, I don't want someone upstairs going, oh, there was holding over there. Because
I
don't think you'll ever stop. I just think you'll never stop complaining about penalties. Not that we're stopping now anyway. So I don't know. Accountability, I don't know really what to do with that. I think it's, you know, it's hard, but when the guy with the ball in his hands is blasted in the face twice on, you know, a potential game tying or game winning drive, really it was a game winning try last night. I don't know what we're doing. I don't know how you can miss that. And then that gets you to, well, they should just fix it if they can. But again, I think that's a rabbit hole I do not really want to go down. I just think what seems clear and obvious to one team's fans won't to another. And I just think you get into a pretty tricky situation there. So anyway, just a mess. Great game to watch. I mean, marred by the officiating at the end, but what a performance. I'm fortunate this week in fantasy to be playing against Burrow and Chase. So our week's over. I mean, the rest of my, we're down 125 to nothing from Thursday night football. And that was only, well, it was Derrick Henry too. So it's three people.
Yeah.
Burrow, Chase, and Derrick Henry. Thank God Henry didn't go off. You know, whatever. Like, it would matter. I mean, we're not climbing out of that hole. I don't think that is going to happen. So anyway, just a messy end, but super fun game to watch. I mean, Chase and Burrow, amazing. And Jackson, just all of it. Just really, really good. Samantha's up next on WGR. Hi, Samantha. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Really good. How are you doing?
I'm good, Q. I just wanted to ask about the MVP, because last year I felt like Allen, other than his turnover ratio down, his stats were really good last year. He was the highest in touchdowns. Mm-hmm. His yards were great. And I feel like statistically him, Dak, and Lamar kind of all could have gone for the MVP last year. But this year, and they said that it was because the Ravens and Lamar had a higher seed, which I understand. But this year, the Bills are currently the 2 seed. The Ravens are the 4 seed, maybe the 3rd after last week. And I feel like at mid-season today, they're saying it's Lamar. I understand he's been playing amazing this year. But I feel like, is there a certain, you know, bullet list that says this is what the MVP is, or does it change year to year?
I don't know if there's a bullet list, but the seed, like how many games your team wins, definitely plays a part in it, and it did last year. Thank you for the call, Samantha, with Lamar. you know, to say aside from the turnovers, though, is tough. Like, I think what doomed Allen is that his year started with a 3-interception performance on Monday Night Football against the Jets, a game they ultimately lost to Zach Wilson. And then he ended up with 18 interceptions on the year. And there was just no escaping the turnover narrative. It got exaggerated to some extent, but it was still bad. Like, it should have dinged him, and it did. I think if he has half of that, maybe he would have won it, despite the excellent season the Ravens had overall. What the Ravens are doing now, they're going to need to get more than being second place in their division for him to win it, in my opinion. But I'm pretty optimistic they can do that. I think they can run down Pittsburgh and end up battling for, you know, the 2 or the 3 with the Bills and with the Texans. And if they do that, and Jackson has, he's tracking for numbers that are comparable to Allen's last year. And so if he does that, I mean, he's going to be hard to deny, I think.
I think the problem is, I don't know that anybody really knows what the qualifications are for MVP anymore, because a lot of it just seems like it's the best player on the best team. I mean, last year that was the case. There were several better cases, not even just Josh Allen, just players that had better seasons statistically. And so I don't know if it has become a statistic-based award any longer. I think it's kind of more so a popularity contest on, hey, this is the best team in the league. They have the number one seed in the AFC or the NFC, and also he's the best player on that team. Because 24 touchdowns was one of the worst seasons of an MVP ever. So I think this year it's gonna be tough for the league, I think, to vote for Lamar Jackson again, knowing that he was significantly better this year than he was last year, because that's all the conversation is going to be about. So I think you have to take into account that he has the best running back in the league on his team with him. I think that stands for something. And to your point, I don't think they're going to be the best team in the league. And so that could open the door for other people. Let's say Josh ends up with 4,000 yards, 28 touchdowns, and then he adds another 6 or 7 rushing touchdowns and ends the season with 6 interceptions. It's going to be hard to keep it away from Josh, because he will have done what everybody held against him last year.
Yeah.
And we'll have a better season with less weapons.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's set up nicely for him, but right now Jackson's outperforming him. And
I
so
I don't care about the MVP.
You don't. Yeah.
I don't care.
All right. Well,
I get it, cuz like it's something to fight about.
Yeah.
I don't care. It's not going to, no one is going to look back at the career of Josh Allen and say, he's just not a Hall of Famer. Never won an MVP.
Well, I agree with that. But I don't know. I would like him to have the hardware.
If Lamar Jackson wins another MVP, he will have more MVPs than playoff wins. So congratulations.
Yeah, he's not a perfect candidate.
No.
But I'm just saying, he's having the year
no doubt
that
about
he
it.
Needed to have to get a third one. And if the team ends up winning 12 or 13 games, which is certainly in the window for them, I think it, and he keeps tracking this way. I mean, there's still a lot of football to be played, so we'll see. The thing can fluctuate. I mean, Patrick Mahomes 2 weeks ago was still the favorite, even though he was having a terrible year, more really of a placeholder, because the betting houses didn't want to put a big number on him for fear that they would continue winning and he'd eventually start producing, which is kind of starting to happen a little bit. He's played maybe his best 2 games. Their offense has been better the last couple of games they've played. So maybe that is starting to percolate a little bit. All right. Speaking of the MVP and the weekend's action, we will get into a lot of it here with our buddy Sam Panayotovich from BetQL Daily. He'll be our guest coming up right after this timeout. Then we've got Sal at 4 and Matt Perino on the Bills at 5, Paul Hamilton at 6. Nate Geary is in for Mike Schrobe today. And, I'm being very, very slack. You are listening, by the way, to Football Friday.
Ah, yes, you are.
Here on WGR, which is brought to you by Celino Law. Car crash? Call Celino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby way. It's time for a break. We'll be back in a snap. Brought to you by Snapdragon Apples. That was my own special effect added. The official apple of the Buffalo Bills.
Well, to be honest with you, Yeah, I just listen to what our trainer says. When he gives me the information, when he tells me, he gives me the green light, that's when he's playing. And to this point, we haven't had that, and since he's gone down with the injury. And so we'll see where it goes. Obviously, he's a really good player, and so he's a good player for us. So, but, you know, all the while, somebody else has to step up and fill in for both Keon at this case and if Amari can't go.
The Bills already know they're going to be without Keon Coleman for at least this week. Sounds like it could be even longer than that, but less than 4 weeks. They do have a bye coming up here 2 weeks from Sunday after they play Kansas City. They'll be off, and then they come back and play on a Sunday night at home against San Francisco. Maybe that's a realistic target for Keon Coleman. Amari Cooper, questionable game time decision, maybe is where we're tracking there. If not, like, you know, one of those 5 a.m. Adam Schefter tweets that'll be like, you know, you find out that he's, you know, probably not going to play. Either way, we'll find out more once we get to the weekend. On the line right now is the host of BetQL Daily and Odyssey Sports BetQL Insider, Sam Paniatovich. BetQL Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Also, be sure to listen to BetQL Daily, their podcast. For more analysis, just search BetQL Daily wherever you find your podcasts. Sam, Nate, Sam.
Howdy.
Hey, Sam. What's going on, man?
How are we doing, bud?
I can feel the anxiety and the nervousness from 500 miles away on this Bills game. I can feel it through the phone.
Really? I've actually, if you could see Bulldog right now, one of the more calm presence I've seen. And I've known him for almost 10 years.
Well,
he's very calm.
Yeah. Well, my wife is probably secretly sedating me. Joe told us yesterday, Sam, that you had a strong feeling on this game. He said he wouldn't go near it. So what is your strong take, and is it going to make me more full of anxiety? Because you're right. I'm a little, you know, I don't like trap game talk and stuff, but I don't know. This feels just a little trappy to me.
Well, first off, I love to find out on a Friday that your wife puts the red pills in the applesauce. That's mm-hmm. amazing. I love finding that out about you. We learn a little bit about each other every week.
That's what we're here for.
I like the under in the game, actually, and I bet under 47 yesterday. That's gone. So I hate to pass post on your program. I see a lower and slower game. I think the Colts' appetite is a little too much, and it's ironic because last week, me, you, and Mike were talking about, this line is fishy on the Buffalo side, right? Mm-hmm. Buffalo was a 6-point favorite against Miami, and the three of us collectively said, that's a freaking trap. And it was. You needed a 61-yarder to win that game. This week, I don't want to play the zigzag card, but Indianapolis is the trendy dog. Everywhere I look, it's, the Colts catching points, Colts catching points, Colts can run the ball. I don't know. I'm not going to get involved with the side. I think you guys are a cheap 3.5. I would need more points with the Colts, but I like the under, which did get blown off the 47 yesterday. So not the pass post, but I just did. I like the under.
Well, that makes sense because, you know, the Colts – I don't know. The Bills are expert at taking away the downfield stuff. I think we know that that's Flacco's stock and trade. I might be interested if I put a parlay together for this game in looking at interceptions for Flacco, because I think the Bills could get him a couple of times if he's trying to push it down the field, because they play that too high deal and they'll just be sitting on stuff like that, I would think. But yeah, I think what's on everybody's mind here, Sam, is Jonathan Taylor. And yeah, it was 3 years ago now, but I mean, he ran all over the Bills in a meeting here in Buffalo in the 21 season, and nobody's forgotten that. And the Bills basically play a kind of defense that begs you to run it. And they're more worried about you beating them over the top, and it has served them well, but this might be a tough matchup with that in mind.
I can't believe Jonathan Taylor's only 25. I said 35. He's only 25. I feel like he's been in the league longer than that. That just blew my mind. I thought he was at least 28, 29. Look, I think it's going to be interesting to see how Bobby Babbitt decides to handle Flacco, because the Vikings brought hell. They threw everything at Flacco. And the Colts' offensive line is good. I don't think it's great anymore. Last year they were a top three offensive line in terms of Pro Football Focus and all the analytics and the metrics and all that. Minnesota got right through that crap. So I think if you can bring the pressure, obviously it's a chess game, as we know, and I never played football, but I've watched 5,000 football games in my life. If you can get to Joe Flacco, that's the key. And Minnesota did that extremely well. Curious to know what you guys think Babbage is going to do. I would just make Flacco uncomfortable.
It would really be a trend breaker, which maybe is all the more reason to do it, if they did bring a lot of heat. They're one of the least blitz-prone teams in the league, the Bills. They like to just try to get home with four and just try to confuse you with coverage. So it'd be a real tendency breaker if they brought extra like five or six rushers on occasion, because it very rarely happens.
Well, if you give Flacco time, he has proven over the years, and you guys saw this a lot when he was in Baltimore, he can pick you apart. He can dink and dunk you down the field. Minnesota said, we are not going to allow that to happen, and they shut it down. But I do, you know, back to the handicap, I think it's a game where Indianapolis is going to try and run the ball, try and keep Josh Allen off the field. This number on the look-ahead total-wise was 48, and when they reopened it, they opened it 48, so it didn't really budge. We've seen a lot of sharp money the last couple of days on the under. Under 48, under 47, MGM 46.5 right now, and it's hard for me to sit here and say, well, I loved it at 47 and I don't love it at 46.5. But as you guys know, that 47 is a big number. You know, 27-20 is a very common landing score. You know, it's an important number for totals.
Sam, let me ask you about the about the running game specifically for Indianapolis. Obviously, Jonathan Taylor, very good running back. Like, how much do we, when I'm looking at a game like this, how much do you, like, allow bias from a previous, like, the previous performance to control your thought process on a matchup like this? Because, obviously, Jonathan Taylor in their previous matchup a couple of years ago went off. Last week is maybe what I'm thinking of is the Miami Dolphins really ran the football all over this Bills defense. But the week before that in Seattle, I think Kenneth Walker is one of the best running backs in football.
Couldn't get anywhere.
Completely shut him down. Like, how do you parse out a back-to-back performances that are so dramatically different to try to project what this defense will do against another good running attack?
I think you have to look at the aggregate. I can never look at one football game and think that what happened in that game is absolute. I actually, if you take all the games that the Bills have played this year, I use this website. If anybody wants to check it out, it's great. It's free. I use it every day. It's called Sumer Sports, SUMERSports.com. And they have every game. So they take every game that every team has played and they put it through the grinder and spit out stats. The Buffalo Bills, believe it or not, are a top 10 team in the NFL against the run. That might not sound real, but it is. It is statistically and metrically driven. So the top three teams against the run, Minnesota, Pittsburgh, LA Chargers. That adds up, right? We all know that. Mm-hmm. They're all good against the run. Bills are 9. So while they may have had some games where they're not good against the run, and I think the obvious one that comes to mind is when they played Baltimore, Derrick Henry went down their eye hole the whole game, it's going to happen. It's going to happen against good teams and good running attacks. I think this running defense is actually underrated. And then if you want to play it the other way, the Colts running offense against all their opponents so far, the Colts running offense is 21st in the league. So I think we are trying to avoid the narrative that the Colts are a really good running team and the Bills are really not a good running defense when the numbers and the metrics tell us the opposite.
Right. Excellent. Sam Paniadovich on the Wester Hotline with us, one of the co-hosts of the BetQL Daily show that you can hear on the Bet 1520 every weekday. All right, enough on the Bills and the Colts, because I want to save some time here to pick your brain on the college football playoff stuff. But anything else in the NFL this week that you're really high or low on?
Yeah, I'm betting against the Rams. I didn't do it last week. I stayed away. But Monday night with Tua back under center, that offense is just so much better. And I think they're going to really carve up this overrated Rams defense. So I took a 1.5 with Miami. And then the Bears, all the Bears do is beat the teams, Bulldog. They've done it all year. The Titans, the Jags, the Panthers, they can beat bad teams. They can't play against good teams and win. Mm-hmm. But New England is horrible. You guys have seen it. I mean, bottom three offense, bottom three defense. It's a big number for the Bears. I understand it, but I think it should be bigger. So I did lay some 6 with Chicago.
What are your thoughts on this early look at the 12-team college football playoff? And how much does having the 12 teams affect how people are handling, you know, the futures here, like the playoff itself and the national championship?
So I can tell you we've heard about a couple pops from some sharp players, because we have bookmakers from Vegas on our show all the time. And there are two teams that the wise guys have bet this week. And it's ironic because these teams are basically on the edge of the board. They could either jump into the pool or never make the pool. Alabama and Ole Miss. Those are the two bets that wise guys are betting at good numbers. So Alabama, you can find as high as 18-1. Ole Miss is as high as 35-1. The irony is, if either of them lose, they're probably out. You know,
right.
But if Alabama wins, if Ole Miss wins, those odds get maybe not cut in half in terms of Alabama, but Ole Miss goes from 35-1 to 15-1 if they beat Georgia at home, which they very well could. They're a 2.5-point yep. dog. That's what you're seeing right now in terms of the betting market. You know, wise guys don't care about the bracket. They don't care about the rankings. They are trying to finagle their way in with a team that could get in and get hot. And the two common teams from wise guys are both in the SEC. Yeah, they haven't been that great to date, but there is this rising belief that if Alabama or Ole Miss or both get in, they are dangerous. So that's what I've heard this week. And I do have – I had lines made for you on the four first-round games, if you'd like.
Oh,
how about that?
Right, lovely. Yeah, let's have it.
So, these are all home games, obviously. Ohio State would be 18.5 on Boise State.
Okay.
Tennessee would be 8 on Indiana. Texas would be 4.5 on Bama. And Penn State, 3.5-4 on Notre Dame. Those are the lines according to a very, very good odds maker from Las Vegas. That's a big number on Ohio State. It might not be big enough, Bulldog.
Yeah, no, I get that, right? I mean, we've got the classic, you know, I mean, Boise State's been around on the national scene, but it's still hard to take them as a powerhouse on the level of, like, an Ohio State. So, like, yeah, I totally get that. How big a deal for the markets is a team like Notre Dame that has such a passionate national following?
Oh, they bet them no matter what. They bet them if they're good. They bet them if they're bad. That is basically the Yankees of college football.
Whoa, Sam.
What did I say that was incorrect?
Whoa. Man, first of all, the question felt oddly personal because Bulldog didn't even make eye contact with me when he said it. So I knew he was trying to get a rise out of me. But the Yankees comment, I resent that. I just want you to know.
Well, in terms of popularity and the fans being stupid and all, you know.
And the lack of winning, right? You know, all that money.
Did you go to Notre Dame?
That is like what literally every fan who's or every other person who's asked, why are you Notre Dame? Did you go to Notre Dame? No, I didn't go to Notre Dame.
No, his name, last name's Geary.
Yeah. I'm just Irish.
Yeah. That's it, yeah. He's one of them.
Shamrock, you have a shamrock tattoo on your ribcage.
It's a tramp stamp.
That's it. All right. Hey, Sam, anything else we need to know here?
Yeah, I think this Texas team is in a really good spot. So the quarterback Lagway at Florida, he had a really bad hammy injury over the weekend. The coach said he might play. If he plays with a bad hammy against Texas, they are insanely stupid. Texas might win 38-7. That's a big number, but whew, tough spot for Florida to go into Austin tomorrow, Bulldog.
Love it. Our regular producer, Zach Jones, is a big Texas fan, and he is actually on his way to Austin right now. He's got the weekend off and won't be back till Monday to go watch his Longhorns, I think, for the first time in person.
Yes.
So that's awesome for him. All right, Sam, great deal. We'll look forward to next Friday. Have a good weekend, and good luck to you.
You got it. Good luck, everybody.
All right. That was the host of BetQL Daily and Odyssey Sports BetQL Insider, Sam Paniatovich. BetQL Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Go check out all of the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. All right. Hey, some of the advanced metrics tell you the Bills' run defense isn't bad. Also tells you the Colts' run game isn't that good. What do you think? Are you just having nightmares about Jonathan Taylor from the 21 season still, or are you doing all right here? Football Friday here on WGR, brought to you by Celino Law. Car crash? Call Celino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs, start your day the Crosby's way. Nate Geary's in for Mike Schoep. I am the Bulldog, and you're listening to WGR. Grooving our way through a Friday afternoon here on WGR. Thanks for being with us. It's contest time right now. Caller 5 at 716-221-4WGR. That's 4947. Is going to win themselves a pair of tickets to see Sebastian Maniscalco at KeyBank Center a week from tomorrow, Saturday, November 16th. Courtesy of Live Nation, tickets are on sale at Ticketmaster.com. Again, that's 716-221-4947. Caller 5 gets the Sebastian Maniscalco tickets. So good luck to all y'all. All right. Well, it can only be one winner, though. I mean, that's how life works. Sabres. Hey.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Hang the banner.
I mean, that was nice.
Yeah.
That was nice. 6-1. Just... right from the start?
Romping.
Yeah.
The goaltending was good.
Goaltending was excellent, I think.
Physical.
They finished just really, really good. I think the difference in the way that they've had other good games this year without anything from Cousins, Quinn, and Benson. Benson, of course, has been out, and I think when he was playing, he was still not even right. He got hurt right away when they went to Europe and played through some stuff, but he's been out a bit and his back, and he looked fantastic. And that line right from the start, that second goal was just a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
Just good, fast, hard work, good shot, just excellent. And so having those cats going, man, that makes a big difference. Because Thompson's line has been producing. Their third line with McLeod and Greenway and Zucker has been their best line. You know, the fourth line plays its role. The sinkhole on this team has been that Cousins line. So much so that last weekend at this time, we were talking about Cousins going to the wing. And that didn't even last two games. They got through Friday night, and then by
they got it figured
halfway
out.
Through Saturday night, they got him out of there. And now that line's back together, and hopefully they can start stacking good games together. And so can the team. I mean, really good job to springboard off of an ugly weekend last weekend and win your two games this week. I hope this isn't a death knell for this little winning streak they're on, but I'm going to the game tomorrow afternoon.
I appreciate you staring that right in the face and saying, I don't care, I'm going.
I just really hope. I arranged to get the tickets before last night's game. So either way, I was committed to going to the game. But now that they beat the Rangers like they did on the heels of beating Ottawa, I mean, 5-1, 6-1, holy cow, the Sabres are a wagon, break them up. Please. I beg of you.
Don't ruin this for me.
Do not sleepwalk through a home game Saturday afternoon against Calgary. I just don't think I can handle it. Like, it's another one of these games. And look, the hockey season is so long that it gives you ample opportunities to feel like, oh, if they get this one, then I'm really buying in. Right? Like, you just trip on that constantly in the hockey season with this team anyway. They have a chance to sort of bust what expectations and tendencies are, because, you know, I think I speak like a lot, I don't want to say four, but like a lot of Sabres fans would be thinking, like, which is just please don't screw up this Calgary game. They've got a nice little stretch here. They can get pretty fat if they are on it.
They could. This is like, it's like kind of like the last 3 weeks of the Bills schedule, which is like, hey, here's our chance. We got a really tough end of our season. Let's stack some wins.
Now, a part of that is out west, and the LA Kings are in first place in their division, by the way, so that's not an easy mark. But Anaheim, San Jose are in there. We got Montreal on Monday. The Blues are all right, but still, like, you got to look at a nice little stretch here, beginning with Calgary tomorrow afternoon. So hopefully that'll work out. If I get time a little bit later, we're going to take a break now, an amusing anecdote about where I'm sitting tomorrow that just was one of the happiest accidents I've ever experienced. So maybe we'll get to that in a little bit, but we're going to take a break. Sal Capaccio is straight ahead for us here at the top of the hour. Final injury reports are out for the week. Sean McDermott was a guest with Sal earlier this morning, so we'll get the rundown on everything that's happening on that front and then talk more about how this Bills team needs to attack and defend the Indianapolis Colts Sunday starting at 1 o'clock. So that's straight ahead. Nate Geary in for Mike. I'm the Bulldog. You're listening to WGR.